Welcome to the Do Your Good podcast series. In this podcast series, you'll hear from me, Sybil, and other experts in the field to help you make your money matter and make a huge difference in the world. I come to you with over two decades of experience as a person who's helped donors give away over $45 million in donations, both large and small. This podcast series is meant to give you the tools you need to be effective in the world and fund nonprofits and issues that you care about with meaning and purpose, and to make a true, deep difference in the world. Hello, everyone. I'm happy to offer you this rerun of my interview with the Jubitz Family Foundation. They're one of my clients, and I did this interview back in season one with the team that's working on the War Prevention Initiative. I wanted to offer you this interview because right now we're talking about various ways to approach giving. And this approach is very much focused on an initiative where the donor, Jubitz Family Foundation, has an expert staff person who's working on a campaign to promote world peace through their war prevention initiative. And so it's just another way to go about grant making and donating, where you're really leaning in and making a difference in this manner. It's very different from doing general support grants. And it really is up to you how you want to approach donating. And that's why I wanted to pull out some of my favorite interviews with all the different folks that I work with and that I know who approach giving in such different ways, either through like general support grants or in the manner that Jubitz Family Foundation is doing, where they have this expert staff and they're doing an independent initiative to promote world peace. All right, have a listen. Welcome, everybody. I'm so excited to have you, Al and Patrick and Lauren, on my podcast, my dear friends and colleagues. And actually, I work for you too, doing your environment work. But the thing I wanted to talk to you about today is your war prevention initiative. I want to start out, Al, by asking you, as a funder, you're a longtime philanthropist, Al, as a trustee of a foundation that you created. You know, I'd like you to talk a little bit about sort of your personal journey to philanthropy, and then like what made you decide you wanted to start this war prevention initiative? Like, what was it that motivated you there?
Thank you, Sybil. Boy, that's a good one. You know, for 34 years, I just loved business, you know, but I also loved what was happening in the community. And so I stayed very active, and primarily through Rotary meetings, hear what's going on in the community. So I have a lot of interest, a great curiosity. And the burden of all that is when you have knowledge gained through many ways, of course, and you don't act on it, it just doesn't rub me the right way. So to come in from the side on this issue a little bit, the definition of leadership I like is understanding reality and acting on it. So I'm kind of driven by that. So when I learned about the arms race in the 70s and 80s and nuclear weapons, even to present day, or environmental degradation through development and all kinds of other things, and now climate change, I just cannot ignore it. I just have too much information and too much desire to do something about it than to do nothing about it. So the foundation, being successful in business and then getting out of a business 20 years ago this year, or no, 18 years ago this year, I had an opportunity to apply what I knew and try to make a difference in the planet. And that literally is one of the greatest privileges anybody could have, is the means and the knowledge to make a difference. So that's what I hope my legacy will be. And the foundation is a great structure in which to do this work. And when you have younger people like Patrick Hiller and Lauren Foreman to help you, it's joyful. It's just joyful. And yourself. Don't let me forget Sybil. Oh my God, the environmental guru. So it's been a lot of fun, and it's getting more fun, although the challenges are extreme.
Al, thank you for that. Hello, everyone. I want to let you know that I am putting forward a pretty exciting new podcast season which is going to focus on the journey I took with one of my clients to think through effective funding strategies to reduce firearm-related suicide in rural and remote communities, specifically looking at Oregon as an example. So tune in to my podcast series September 30th through October 21st. Every Monday, I'll have a new special episode specifically discussing this issue. Thanks a lot. And before we go to Patrick and Lauren to talk about some of the other pieces, because they're the amazing staffers that are helping make the Making the War Prevention Initiative a reality, can you talk to me a little bit about, you said something about you had a business that was successful, and then you transitioned about 18 years ago from running your business to really running the foundation. And what are some principles from your business life, when you did the business and built that business, what are some principles there that have helped carry you through to creating this really interesting structure with the War Prevention Initiative?
I think that one of the major principles of the business of our family, not just me, but my dad, my brothers, was listen closely to the customer, and they will guide you into what you should do. Provide, if you will. So you may start out in business thinking you're going to make a widget, but end up making a car because the customer says, don't want widgets, I want a car. And so it's like listen to the customer. In the area of philanthropy, it's listen to the needs of the community and then try to satisfy those needs. Now, from the get-go in 2001, when we started the Family Foundation, I wanted it to be an active foundation. Meaning hire people to put them in the community to listen to what the community needs. And so that's the way we've run it. So we do have salaries, we do have positions, and as a result, we have a terrific understanding of societal challenges. And then we try to put our modest money in those directions. So, you know, I don't do it alone. I do it with you. The important thing is to be really, really good listeners and to try to deal with the issues of the day.
That's great. Really well said, Al. And I'm going to definitely come back to you. We have more questions for you as we want to dig into some of these key issues. Now I want to move over to Patrick. And Patrick, can you talk to me a little bit about your sort of both your personal journey in the work you do around peace and helping Al in creating the War Prevention Initiative, and just your journey there, both personally and professionally, would be great to hear.
Well, thanks, Sybil. I'd love to talk about that. And it's great to have an opportunity to reflect on now almost 10 years of the War Prevention Initiative and the foundation. I came to this from academia to activism, back to academia, and then into this scholar practitioner role that I have now. When I studied for my master's degree in social geography, I observed a lot of social conflict, and I experienced that abroad in Mexico, where I went to conduct field work. I became involved in a lot of social justice and peace activism, which led me then to pursue a doctorate degree in conflict resolution and peace studies. And out of that, I think it was just the perfect timing that I happened to show up in Oregon and I was introduced to Al. And in our very first meeting, Al came at me with this big vision. I said, hey, so you're the young scholar guy here. What do you say if I tell you I want to end all war? And I think the conversation went along those lines of hire me and let's get started.
And that's what Al said to you. He said, you're the big vision. Let's make this happen. Let's end all war. That's great. I love that, Al. I love that, Patrick.
Well, it led to one of our first so-called Parkdale peace gatherings. And Al had already planned that gathering with his cousin Ray, who was running the foundation back then. And they were kind enough, or I'd like to say smart enough, to hire me to run that meeting. And so we had 22 people that they knew in the Oregon context that were working on different conflict resolution and peace issues and had the Rotary angle to it. And my job was to facilitate and host that meeting in Parkdale over 2 days. And I remember one thing there, and I'm telling that because that's how the War Prevention Initiative started. In one of the sessions, I had all the participants, I structured it around that the participants were supposed to identify different causes of war and different conditions for peace, or also alternatives to war, what can be done. So we had two lists, and there was an amazing, beautiful list of alternatives to war. And out of that really came the conversation. One, we sure want to end all wars, but our main goal should be to prevent all wars. And two is that we are at a time and age where we actually know that there are more effective and better alternatives to all kinds of political violence and wars. So out of that meeting in April 2011, I believe, if I recall correctly, we started the War Prevention Initiative, and I've been with it ever since. It's grown into a small but mighty program within the foundation. I feel that we're recognized beyond the size of our foundation and the size of our team. And we are just moving forward and trying to, you know, transform not only our field, but really create a more just and peaceful world.
That's so great. And Patrick, and maybe Al, you're going to want to talk a little bit about this too. And then Lauren, I'm going to put you on the spot in a second. But you were talking a little bit about small but mighty, right? And I'd really like you to dig into that a little bit more, because I know Patrick and Al, you both collaborate with other funders. I'd love you to talk about your collaborations with other funders and how exactly do you make yourself small and mighty? And talk a little bit about what you mean by small. Talk all about those pieces. How are you, you know, punching above your weight?
Well, in our work, I think it's important that we are realistic about who we are and how many people we can reach in a meaningful manner. So us just getting out there on a soapbox and yelling out loud might just not be the best thing to do, even though we're right about the issues. So we really, really work hard on using the power of networks. And quite frankly, we had to, you know, work our way into them and earn the respect. And I think we've done that through our professional approach. And, you know, it is, if I look at my work, one of the greatest privileges, I think, is that I am allowed to do my work as a professional in the field that I was trained for, and that I have that support and backing from Al and his daughters through the foundation, and that we can build that program. So back to the networks, we have identified different networks with other funders, with applied peace builders, and we work very hard with academics and with Rotarians, for example. Those are four network groups. And we try to leverage the power of the networks there. We are in constant communication with individuals and groups in those networks, so that when broader shifts and ideas come out of, for example, what is peace and security funding, that we were able to be part of forming those narratives, because we're engaged in the so-called back end of those networks. The same thing we've tried to do, and I think at times with great success, in the context of Rotary and Rotarians, because we're just constantly in the background having those conversations, being in meetings, sharing insights from our work. And we feel that we have what we call outsized impact that way, that we can really be shaping more than we could if we were just kind of, you know, yelling out at a undefined so-called general public.
Yeah, effective collaboration equals outsized impact. I hear you. Al, did you want to add anything to that?
Yes. Basically, we are applied science. Patrick had asked you to talk about the Peace Science Digest, a publication that you're now in your, what, sixth year, seventh year?
We are in our sixth year now. And it is, again, out of the War Prevention Initiative. So with that, it is part of our foundation. We have the Peace Science Digest as a publication in which we want to make significant, relevant peace research accessible, because usually it's hidden behind paywalls in academic databases. We want to make it understandable, because academic writing is not understandable by design, and therefore it is not useful. And we want to make it useful, because our field, peace studies, is about the examining conditions of war, causes of war, and the conditions for peace. So if we examine those, but those insights are not shared, then I think they're absolutely useless. Then it's really an academic exercise. So we have bridged that gap in our sixth year now. And we know we have some more solid data on our impact, but I think some of the anecdotal impact is very, very promising, that practitioners have adopted some of the ideas that we shared from research in a context of building peace in a post-conflict society, for example.
We will have links to the Peace Science Digest, the War Prevention Initiative in the show notes and on my website for any listeners out there who are interested in learning more about the peace work that you're all doing. Hello, everyone. I'm so glad that you're enjoying my podcast. In my podcast, I hope to talk to you, the wonderful donors and philanthropists that I work with, to help you think through the most effective way to make your money matter. I also, in my podcast series and through all my trainings, want to help and support the nonprofits that are out there trying to raise money and hone their pitch. Because I'm somebody that works with donors, I get pitched all the time by amazing nonprofit leaders, so I know what it takes to raise money effectively. Please check out everything I have to offer at www.doyourgood.com. I have a whole host of course materials and lessons, videos, downloadable documents, a blog that I keep updated. All of it is 100% free for you to see and review and learn from. Please check it out. Again, www.doyourgood.com. Thanks a lot. I also want to talk a little bit about, so here it is. We have the War Prevention Initiative. We have this amazing person, Patrick, who's working with Al, who had the vision. You both had the vision to move this forward. You have the Peace Science Digest, and you have practical work you're doing on the ground. The thing that also, though, defines you is that you also still give grants out. So that's what makes you different from just sort of a regular nonprofit, which regular nonprofits are awesome and terrific and important. I just wanted to emphasize that this is just a little different, a funder-driven initiative here that Al, you helped start and hired Patrick to lead. You're also still giving grants out. So can you talk about that dynamic of you have a full-time staffer, Patrick, and you're giving grants also to peace building organizations and nonprofits that are supporting the work Patrick's doing? And Patrick, you're sort of serving as that program officer. Every trustee meeting, you offer grants to partner organizations, not you, but the family does, but you recommend them. So let's talk about that dynamic a little bit and how it distinguishes the War Prevention Initiative from sort of a public charity nonprofit.
In 2001, when we started, we had three legs of the stool: at-risk children, the environment, and peace. A decade later, Parkdale happened because we weren't getting many grant requests for peace. And you heard that story. Now we started a peace initiative with an outsized impact on the industry around the world. Very proud of that. The children, I still give to charities personally that support children, but it's such a big, big thing. And we're such a small foundation that we just felt we were not making a big impact there. And the environment, I hope we get to talk about your work, Sybil, on the environment, because that's the third leg.
This is great. I'm so glad you talked about the focusing piece, because that links in also to, as part of focusing, you focus on environment and peace. And you've hired Patrick as the staffer for Peace, and you still give out grants in the Peace area because you were able to focus.
So we give away maybe 10 to 20 grants per year to other Peace-related organizations. Why do we do that? Well, because they're specializing in very specific things that we support. It's pretty simple. We publish scientific research, and we network with people to promote common objectives. But a lot of people are very deep into some of these things, and as you know, as soon as you turn the first page of the peace topic, if you will, or peace discipline, is that there is a lot of issues around peace. You can stay very, very busy learning about and practicing your own piece of peace. It's a big subject. And therefore, we have to partner with people, and we like to support them modestly. These are not huge, huge grants. These are modest grants showing support. So it's good business at this point, but it is unique. You're right about that. But may I speak about the Rotary connection? Because Patrick was talking about his networks, and I felt for quite a while now that the only way we really have a chance of preventing all war by 2030, which is less than a decade now, is to work with Rotarians worldwide. And Patrick mentioned that. And I'd just like to add that Rotarians live and work in communities around the world, 35,000 Rotary clubs in just about every country. They know the pulse of their community. They know the conflicts, and they know how to call a meeting and to bring the adversaries together. And what we're trying to do is to teach the average Rotarian about peace science and conflict resolution, how that works, and what we've learned through academic research. So you may say that Rotary is one of our primary channels to promote peace.
Al, so important that you're saying so many things that are important, and I want to unpack them for a minute. One is, you just said you're a Rotarian yourself, and it means a lot to you. Mm-hmm. So you were able to really connect in with something you care about to make a difference in the world and to stay connected to your giving through that, which is key. The other thing that I wanted to circle back on that I think you were talking about is the War Prevention Initiative. You give grants and you have amazing staff. A lot of times people think of a foundation as just sort of sitting back and giving out grants only, which that can be effective. That can be fine as a pathway. But this is a really interesting pathway as well, where you've created the War Prevention Initiative with high quality, amazing staff who are experienced in the field, and you're giving grants at the same time. And so I just think that's really cool. And the other piece, Al, that you just brought up, that you were talking about Rotarians, I just want to say this as it's not the focus, I guess, of this interview, but maybe we should bring Reem on at some point too, because you also started a nonprofit that is now an official separate nonprofit called the Rotarian Action Group for Peace that definitely also partners with your foundation and with Patrick and with Lauren and others. So you've done all of these interesting things with philanthropy that are just not the stereotypical traditional ways to go, and they're ways to go and they're effective. So that's why I wanted to bring those up. So Patrick, I had that question for you as well about giving grants and being a staffer. I wanted to go to you. And then Lauren, I haven't forgotten. I really have some good stuff for you to put you on the spot. So Patrick, please add to that.
Yeah, I think Al really said most of what needs to be said there. And if you notice, the language we're using there is really, we're talking about partners much more than about grantees. And I think that is genuine. So the one thing I'd emphasize there, in addition to everything else, that is really the partnership nature.
Thanks. And then I want to go over to Lauren to talk to her a little bit, because Lauren is your executive director. And there's also additional things that you've been interested in on the side of, you know, you have these big strategies. You have these big important strategies where you have staff like Patrick working on War Prevention Initiative. But then there's things you also care about, Al, as a person and a trustee, that may not fit directly into the WPI or the War Prevention Initiative, but you care about, like the peace polls. So what I'd love to do is have
racial justice.
Right. I mean, all of these things, and they're very local here in Portland too. We've really felt them. And so you don't want to ignore those. And I'd love for you and Lauren to talk a little bit about, because Lauren, as the executive director, has helped you with some of those additional sort of more personal, close to home kind of things that Patrick really can't spend his valuable time on. Not that it's not valuable, important stuff. It's just he's working on those bigger pieces around the world on preventing war. So, Lauren, can you talk a little bit about that as being Al's executive director and sort of helping him implement some of those issues that he also cares about?
I think one of the challenges in a role like mine, in working for an individual like Al or any kind of a individual or group who is very visionary and creative is just, you know, it's amazing, you know, how creative Al is. And the challenge in that is getting them to focus. And I think that teams work really well when there's a visionary and then, you know, the researcher like Patrick, the implementer, you know, like our team. And then somebody like me who kind of reins it all in and keeps everybody sort of on the same track. But that's really an important
part you're saying. No, that's great. Mm-hmm. And I think this is another journey. There's so many learnings for the Jubitz Family Foundation, I think, for other folks. Another learning is that Al is so visionary. We had specific programs that he was focused on, right? So War Prevention Initiative, starting up the Rotarian Action Group for Peace. We haven't talked about the specific work I do with the family, with Al and the family, but I run the environment program work. And so Lauren, what you're saying is we were all doing great stuff. It's just that it was all a little bit like we were all doing things in our silos. And so
it was siloed.
Yeah. You were brought in as the executive director about a year ago. And you've been really effective at sort of bringing everyone together and supporting Al and his vision. And thank you, because I wasn't actually going there with that question originally. I was just talking about how you can support Al in some of the additional work he likes to do in peace. And I like that you started out, though, first with like, okay, this is the importance of having someone like an executive director help bring everything together, especially with visionary trustees like Al. So great. So can you talk also a little bit about the peace polls and some of the work you're doing for him on the ground?
Yeah, the peace polls actually arose out of the Rotary Action Group for Peace. So, but they needed somebody to coordinate it all. And it was kind of a hybrid between the Rotary Action Group for Peace and the foundation, because the foundation supports the cost of peace polls and peace poll plantings by different Rotary clubs all throughout the country. And essentially now the world, because we have some peace polls being placed in Eastern Europe. But it was Al's idea to just plant as many peace poles as we can, because it's a constant awareness thing for people in the community. If they see a peace pole, they're like, huh, what is that thing? And then they realize, oh, it tells me that I should, you know, remember to be peaceful. And it reminds us all of the importance of appreciating the peace that we have. But at any rate, that was the impetus for starting the Peaceful Project. And so it's just another program of the Jubitz Foundation. And if I might just say something that's interesting about the Jubitz Foundation, different from many other family foundations, which generally family foundations tend to be grant-making and not operational. This is a true hybrid of a foundation in that we are about half grant making and about half program. And that is very rare for a family foundation to be. And that goes back to that creativity that Al has, is that I don't want to just give money away. I want to do something. And I want to be actively involved in the community and doing something. And there's always a challenge there, because you don't want to step on anybody's toes. You don't want to come in and looking like the savior and trying to tell everybody what to do. You want to be very respectful of what's already happening in the community and make sure that you're supporting those efforts. But at the same time, there's some things that only philanthropy can solve.
Al, you wanted to say something about that.
You know, it's this burden of when you understand reality and do not act, it's upsetting to people like me, you know? So what the foundation has taught me is peace science on the one hand, environmental stewardship on the other hand, Sybil, your work, primarily in Oregon, but pieces around the world. And when you have experts on your staff, like Sybil and Patrick, particularly in their silos of peace and environment, and they come to you and educate you on, I should say me, educate me on issues, some of which are intractable, that gets my attention. So I say, okay, yes, we're reactive to grant requests, but what can we do proactively? So the work is just, for me, it's just so stimulating because we have experts. And then, as we said, Lauren keeps it all organized for me and together and focused. And so that's her primary role. So yeah, I'm very, very happy old guy.
That's so great, Al. And then the other thing we didn't talk about in terms of your structure is the foundation itself is a family foundation. So it's you and your three daughters, right? So
yes,
you want to talk about how that works with your family for a minute? And then I see Patrick wanted to say a few words, which is awesome. But talk a little bit about your family foundation dynamics in terms of you and your three daughters and how you all coordinate, organize that way.
I'm one of the happiest things I think any parent can have is a common mission with their children. And over the last 20 years, the age of the foundation, my three daughters, now in their 40s, late 40s and early 50s, have been trustees of the foundation. And so we conduct the grant-making meetings. We go on retreats to reevaluate our purpose, because it started out with my three passions, kids, environment, peace. And so 10 years later, we asked the same question of them. You don't have to have my passions, but they all agreed this was the right thing to do. And so we've been pretty much very much lockstep on the mission of the foundation. And that's extremely gratifying when your children share your values. And so I'm very, very proud of them. The other thing that we do, and all foundations have an opportunity to do this, is to scrutinize your investment policy. And there's more and more socially responsible investing going on throughout the society, and also called ESG. And it would be dishonest if we invested if we were investing through grant making in things like clean air, clean water, healthy environment, peaceful things, and then also investing in war making or polluting industries through our stock portfolio. So we have been a very early adopter of socially responsible investing, deliberately and intensively. We have been out of carbon for 5 years, fossil fuels. We just don't believe that's healthy for the planet. And we have beaten the tracking of the Russell 3000 year after year after year. So we're not giving up any yield by being purists in our portfolio management. So that's, and to get there was one of the most satisfying things I did with my children, was we went through a long questionnaire of our values, our personal values. And then we compared them and we decided what industries not to invest in or to exclude from the portfolio and what other industries we wanted to. So to measure the responses on those questionnaires and the conversations that resulted from the differences, it was just joyful to me as the patriarch of this little family foundation. You know, I just got to tell you, it's just wonderful to have those kind of conversations with your adult children.
Thank you for that. Lauren, did you have any last words that you'd like to say before we go? Because it's just been you're always such a helpful like convener and bringer together on all these things, you know?
Well, from the program side of things, I think of investing as also investing in the community with our grant making.
Thanks for that. Is there something that you don't want to forget and that you don't want to not have on the record?
I want to podcast you. You didn't get much airtime, Sybil. I mean, you're a rock star in the environment within Oregon, at least, and well beyond, I imagine.
So nice of you to say. Thanks, Al. Well, this one's going to be focused on you all. And, you know, okay. I do have some of my podcasts where I'm just talking and I'm calling them Sybil Speaks. So I talk about various pieces of it as well there. But I really am so happy that we could focus on this War Prevention Initiative work and just all the interesting stuff that this foundation does. And it's been a great experience to observe all the different, you know, journeys with you. So I couldn't wait to do this interview. So thanks, everybody.
Just don't call me the senior guy, Al, right?
Okay, Patrick. Right. Well, this has been enjoyable, Sybil. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jordan. Yeah,
that's good.
Thank you, Patrick. I'm extremely proud of this group.
Yep, we have a great team. So there you have it. I hope you enjoyed this podcast as much as I enjoyed making it for you. So if you want to find out more about what I have to offer, please check out www.doyourgood.com and learn more ways to make your money matter. Until next time, do your good and be well.